Welcome, everybody, again. This is Chad Pullen, Church Planting Live podcast. And today I'm so excited to have one of my just best friends, Stephen Knopf, with us. And Stephen is the planting pastor and lead pastor at 801 South in Charlotte. Is it actually, Stephen, would you say, is it closer to Matthews? Where would be your all's location?
Yeah, we're actually located in Matthews, in downtown Matthews, which is a suburb of Charlotte in the southeast Charlotte. Although Charlotte is so large these days, it has basically swallowed all the areas around here. So Matthews is essentially considered a part of southeast Charlotte now.
Great. And so Stephen is the, like I said, the lead pastor there at 801 South. They have been running, for 9 months now. And just in my interactions with Steve over the years, he's just one of those leaders that not only is able to attract the crowd, but he's able to strategically move the crowd into places of discipleship, into places of equipping, and to really begin to doing big things for the kingdom. And just being able to watch his journey over the last few years has been amazing. And I think it's just awesome, Steve, the way God really prepared you for 801 South, and so excited for everyone to get to hear some of the amazing breakthroughs of the journey, but also some of the things that you've learned that can help planters who are going to be listening in such a big way. So why don't you go ahead, Stephen, just kind of give us a snapshot. I know that there are some unique things about 801 South and the way in which you guys have gone about planting that church as it's connected to a mother church. And would love to kind of start there, and we'll see where the conversation takes us.
Sure. That sounds great. Thanks, Chad. I appreciate your words about our relationship as well. But let me start with just kind of a story of how this has come about. 801 South was a little bit of a collision of visions. And to understand it, you'll need to know a little bit about my history. I was born and reared in very traditional, formal United Methodist churches, and went into the ministry, felt called to the ministry as a teenager into the United Methodist Church, and have been a part of that journey ever since, and began to serve in fairly traditional, somewhat formal environments through the United Methodist Church. And at some point along the way, my commitment to the traditional side of church and worship just began to peel away. And it wasn't that I felt it was wrong or bad. As a matter of fact, I still have a great appreciation for that side and that method and format of doing church, of being the church today in our culture and context. But again, my commitment to it just began to fall away. But I never really felt called away from the denomination. I never felt called specifically to plant a church. But my vision for leading as a pastor and in ministry began to change and began to shift. And so over the time, as I was wrestling with that and working that out, where I was serving currently, Matthews United Methodist Church, which is a very healthy, thriving, traditional, established church here in southeast Charlotte, I began to develop a vision for creating a new venue as a part of the church. Now, they've had some experience with planting other churches that are still fairly traditional. They've planted two or three churches over the past 15 years or so, and they have pretty much taken the DNA here of Matthews and tried to plant it otherwise. But this vision was a little bit different. Well, what they were talking about doing was actually planting something of a little bit different DNA and a little bit different culture than what they had now. And so as they were developing a vision and I was developing a vision, God brought us together through a common friend and who pointed us to one another. And so we decided to really step out and try to pioneer some new territory. So what we have established is a modern worship venue on the campus of an established traditional United Methodist Church. And so that's interesting because a lot of what you hear today when you look at leaders and listen to pastors. A lot of what you hear is that it's all about focus and doing one thing really well or a couple things really well, and trying to be very focused with where your resources are directed and what you do. So we're stepping out of that just a little bit to try to do something different. And so far it's been successful. What we have found is that, and when I say successful, I mean judging according to predetermined metrics that we had put in place. But what we have found is that we're able to help both the established traditional church and the new modern environment develop an appreciation for one another, rather than see each other as competing or right and wrong, but to really understand one another and to develop an appreciation to see that God is at work in all spaces here, and different people are able to connect in different spaces, in different environments.
Yeah, that's fantastic, man. I'd love if you could talk just a little bit more when it comes to how you all have had the freedom to somewhat experience autonomy as a separate new church start, that you're not just, my understanding is, Steve, and you help me here, is you're not just another worship experience on the campus on Sunday, but you actually are a daughter church that's being planted out of that. It just so happens that, you know, there's, you all live on the same acreage when it comes to Sunday morning. So would love to hear a little bit about how you guys have had the freedom to have autonomy and any struggles in that, and how you guys had to be clear about kind of setting up some of those boundaries, but then also then how it fits within the greater mission of the overall church.
Sure, absolutely. And the greater vision for the church is simply transforming the world one life at a time through Jesus Christ. And so that's the mission. And so we do say one church, one mission, despite the venue, despite the mode of discipleship into which people enter here through the church. So initially, first of all, a couple of the dynamics that made something like this possible. The lead pastor here at Matthews United Methodist Church is now in his 19th year serving here as lead pastor. So he's been here a long time and has developed a lot of trust, obviously, with the existing congregation and in the community in general. Also, speaking about the lead pastor at Matthews, he has essentially no ego left in the way that he pastors and leads, which I thought was absolutely fascinating. And in order for something like this to really work, you know that sometimes when it comes to leaders and pastors, egos can sometimes get in the way of certain visions. And so I saw pretty quickly that that was not the case here. He just simply had an evangelical urgency to reach people with the gospel. And he's also just extremely competitive and wanted to have a new venue in order to be able to reach people in a way that what the church currently offered would not be able to reach people. So through that process of a couple of weeks discerning from the very beginning that we were going to have some autonomy, that we wouldn't be hampered by the bureaucracy a lot of times that you find in some traditional established churches, that I have been given incredible freedom. Although I've been able to create my own accountability within that, but I've been given incredible freedom outside of the typical polity that you might find in a long established denominational church. And so from the very beginning, we got together with the staff and with other leaders within the church, and we started to decide what would be shared and what would be distinct about these two environments. Because we do have a separate system for discipleship. We do have a separate system for service, but then we also share a lot of the resources and connection that are already established here at the church. So where there's opportunity to share, we try to see if there's a natural fit, but if not, we don't try to force it, and we do keep things distinct. And with 801 South, one of the things that we did at the very beginning was we established what our values were going to be. So we actually have five key values in 801 South, and we filter all of our decision-making through those values to make sure it fits or not. And that helps decide what becomes shared across the church and then what is distinct.
Yeah, that last piece about values, Steve, I mean, we've talked a lot about that in our time together. I just think it's so important because our values help to define what we're going to go after. And so often we make vehicles values or vehicles visions where, you know, the worship experience that you guys have on Sunday, well, it's not really the vision, it's a vehicle you drive to help live into who you are. And being able to differentiate those can be so crucial, as well as just the point of having that senior leader that's guiding the family to be able to not just catch the vision, but then release the vision to the one being empowered to live it out. You know, that idea to be able not to micromanage. Obviously, like you said, there's accountability there, but being willing to say, here's the vision. I get it. Now let me empower someone else to go do it. I just think, you know, speaks volumes for the situation that you have. And for any senior leaders out there listening, I think it's so important as you guys may be thinking about going multi-site or thinking about planting another church, to be willing that once you identify who the person is and God's put those things together, to be able to release them to go and do the work. Not that there's not accountability, not that there's not follow-up relationship, all of that stuff, but giving someone the freedom to actually get out there on the frontier is absolutely crucial. Steve, one thing that I've always appreciated about you, man, is your ability to balance and integrate strategic thinking with hands-on, boots-on-the-ground, like getting it done kind of stuff. And often I find with planters that some are amazing at sitting in their office and thinking of amazing ways they're going to reach their city, but then they actually never get out and do anything. And some planters just get out and hit the streets running, but they have no strategy, that they have no direction as to how they're going to go about it. And you've been able to balance those two. In my interactions with you, a lot of your actions are always flowing from the laboratory, so to speak. I don't know if that makes sense or not. I can flesh that a little bit more, but I'd love for you to speak a little bit about that connection and that integration and how you do that and what you would recommend if you have any tools or disciplines that you have that have allowed you, one, to think critically, but also to get out on the street and get your boots on the ground. That can be so helpful for so many planners that are listening in today.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chad, a lot of the vision for something like 801 South for me comes not just simply influenced by some of the other churches and movements that we're seeing. I wanted to break out a little bit of our denominational mold in order to adopt some principles that I thought that God is clearly using in different places to reach people for his sake, for his kingdom. And so I didn't want to be stuck within a mold to say, here, this is how this works. Now you just go do it. And sometimes we can find ourselves in that position within mainline denominations. But I do a lot of reading. I do a lot of visiting other churches. One thing that I started to do when I was serving a church as a lead pastor was I would just take a group of people who I saw potential in, and I would take them with me, and we would just connect with a church that was doing really good things, and we would just take a little trip. It wasn't a formal conference. I would just call and say, hey, I've got some people I'd like to bring. Could we have a little bit of time with your leadership, and could we experience some of your environments? And the churches that are doing great things, they are so generous. They're so generous. All they want to do is they want to share. They want to share their story. They want to share their resources. And so I found that other churches were so open to that. So I was just trying to learn some best principles from other places. I'm really not a very smart guy, you know, to be honest with you, not super intelligent, but there are a lot of smart people, and I just try to find them, see what they're doing, and then see what kind of transferable principles we can put into place where we are for our particular context and culture. Now, I also try to spend an adequate time discerning just personally from God what it is people in my culture context would be most helpful to reach them. And so a couple of things as far as being practical and understanding that the need for systems, a lot of that, I just kind of look at what other people are doing, seeing what's working well, what's not working well. If it's not something we can do to directly, are there transferable principles that might help us in that? And then as far as, you know, actually getting out into the community, for me, it's just been about practice. Everywhere I've served, I spend very little time on site. I spend very little time in the office. I'm just out in the community, just meeting people, making connections, seeing where I can make new friends, seeing where I can learn from other pastors, even in our local community, trying to establish networks with them to get together, to have lunch, to catch up, see what God's doing in their lives, and talk about some things that are working for them as well. So that's come from just kind of living into it, just really practice more than anything, just making sure that I'm out in the community with a majority of my time as opposed to on-site or at the office, because it's all about relationships. You know, life is about people, and people are about relationships, and I'm just always looking for new opportunities to establish those relationships.
Yeah, man, that's so good. I remember when we planted Crossroads here in Fayetteville, one of the tools that was so helpful that we developed was a contact relationship spreadsheet where I could keep track of all the relationships that I was making and really see where the relationship was to know kind of what a next step was. And that was so helpful and something that I'm reproducing as far as I'm coaching other planters. Now, I just wonder, are there any resources, any disciplines like that you found to be incredibly helpful that could help those planters that may be listening today?
No, there aren't necessarily any specific tools that I have used along the way. I have been encouraged by some other church planters that I've known, that I've come into contact with, that have had little games almost that they have played. A lot of them come from the business world, from the sales world, that they have used. For example, you put a certain number of coins in your right front pocket, and you just decide that you're not going home until all those coins are in your left front pocket, and for every new person you meet, you move a coin over. And so it forces you, and again, this comes with practice. Eventually, it just becomes your culture. It becomes who you are, but it forces you at the beginning to enter into those relationships, to get out there, to meet people, which can be something, especially for those of us that are introverted, it can be something that's not a very comfortable place to begin. There are those type A personalities, the extroverts, that they'll just get out and that's how they live anyway. For a lot of us, I mean, those relationships are so vital within the community. You know, it's going to restaurants around the area where you're serving and meeting waitresses and hosts and baristas at the coffee shop, remembering their names. One tool that I have used is I keep a running note, and I just call it meetings, and then I put the year. And so anytime I learn a name when I'm out in the community, I open it up on my cell phone, and I put in the name, where I met them, the date, and then any other details. And that way, if I'm in that area again and I notice them, especially from afar, I can pull my phone out, look it up, see some of that information. That helps me to then further interact with them. A lot of times people are surprised that you remember their names or any details about them, and that just helps to further those relationships. And you just kind of make the space for God to move in that, and then a lot of times you see him work in that. You're just trying to create the space.
Yeah, you're so right. And man, when those moments happen, they're magical is not the right word, but there's a spark that takes place in those moments for people's lives and for your lives, mm-hmm. and it's just so, so powerful. In keeping kind of the same theme, I want to turn it just a bit into discipleship, and I know from you and knowing a little bit about 801 South that you guys are really focused on disciples who can make disciples. In other words, you guys are really focused on reproduction, and my hunch is that there are probably people at 801 South besides Stephen, that have one of those little notes that they keep track of their meetings. I mean, my hunch is that, you guys are trying to reproduce these things at so many different levels. And as people are beginning to, you know, to get on the ground, to begin to plant the church, they get a crowd around them. You know, over the last 9 months, could you just talk a little bit about the importance of discipleship and reproduction and investment as you begin to meet those folks, build those relationships? What's some of those next steps that you guys have found to be really fruitful? Maybe what are some things that you guys, looking back on it, you would do a little bit differently?
Yeah, absolutely. From the beginning, and again, we're so new at this, you know, we're about 9 months in to launching with our public worship experience. So we're really still in the process of figuring out who we are. You know, we laid it all out on paper beforehand, and we had our systems and structures and procedures in place, but it's amazing how we're having to adapt. Although we've created a culture of change so that we're not set in our ways. We just simply want to be effective. So if we decided that we can make a change for the sake of being more effective towards the mission and vision, we have the opportunity and the freedom and the agility to do that. But one thing that has worked pretty well for us is that we have essentially two levels of discipleship. And what we like to do is define that for people, because disciple is not a word that we use in our everyday vernacular most of the time. So we define that, and we simply define a disciple as someone who follows Jesus and chooses to learn from Jesus and then apply what he or she learns in his or her life. And so we use that language, and that's how we define what a disciple is. We have two opportunities really for discipleship. One is through our small groups. So we immediately try to plug people in to a small group community, and it's an intentional community. And each small group has a leader, and each small group has an apprentice. And apprenticing is really that second level of discipleship. So in our small groups, there's a way that we kind of learn about following Jesus, what that looks like for us in our lives, centering on Scripture, but we learn from each other. So it's not necessarily information transfer where one person is teaching, but we're learning from each other. We're learning from each other's stories and what that looks like for each of our lives. But the deeper level for discipleship really for us is apprenticeship. So every leader has a named apprentice. And this is really a one-on-one discipleship. And the way that this starts is that a leader will recognize a particular gift or talent in another person. And what they'll do is they'll sit down and they'll call that out in that person. And they say, you know, I've noticed this about you. I see this in you. And I would like to help you to develop it further for the sake of serving God and his kingdom. And so then there's a process there, and again, it's a relationship, it's a one-on-one discipleship in which that leader who has already been apprenticed then apprentices somebody else because they have seen something within them and calls them out and helps them live into that gift and that talent in the way that they serve the church and follow Jesus. And what happens is you end up reproducing leaders, because as leaders have their apprentices, they apprentice them into leadership. And then that leader will then name a new apprentice, and the original leader will name a new apprentice as well. And so it's really a multiplication of leadership, but it's really just a form of one-on-one discipleship.
So in that, do you have like multiple people that you're apprenticing, multiple people you're discipling, or is it just one at a time? Do you set a framework on that? Do you set a boundary? How does that work?
Yeah, so the boundaries around our small groups, we try to say 12 to 15 people. But again, as those are growing, which we have seen them grow because we've tried to create an invitational spirit, we encourage people all the time to bring a friend, invite a stranger. Bring a friend, invite a stranger. So we don't want people inviting friends because they're your friends already, just bring them with you. And we also say don't bring a stranger because that's kidnapping. So we discourage that, but you can bring a friend and you can invite a stranger, and we've seen people hold on to that. So we create an invitational spirit in all of our environments, not just the worship experience on Sunday, but also our small groups and our service teams. And so as those have continued to grow, they will, we're naturally creating new leaders. And so as those continue to multiply, they'll reproduce into multiple groups across the board. So we've seen that happening in our ministries, and we've really seen people understanding their identity in Jesus as a disciple, as opposed to simply attending church or participating in a program. They're starting to see themselves in a new light through that apprenticing and that deep layer of discipleship. And we try to hold people to just one apprentice at a time, because it is intentional. It takes time. It takes extra time outside of what they're already doing and how they're already serving. And so we try to hold people to one apprentice at a time. And we don't necessarily set a length of time around what that apprenticing looks like. We do have coaches that are checking in with all of our leaders, making sure that they have an apprentice in place, and then checking in with them on how that relationship is working, what that looks like. And we'll help them to make sure that they're giving it adequate time and attention. And, you know, that helps them to understand when that person has been apprenticed into leadership, as opposed to if that person needs a little further discipleship.
Sure. I tell you, man, as I'm listening to you, just one of the words that just is coming to me over and over again is intentionality. And it just seems like there's intentionality at every single level. Just life as we end up, Steve. I'd love for you to talk about how also you focus that intentionality on your family. I mean, obviously the stresses of planting a new church can just be mind-boggling, and there aren't enough hours in the day. And I also know that you have one of those marriages and families that's worth imitating. And just for guys out there that are thinking about planting a church, you have a young family. Would love if you could just, you know, speak a couple words of encouragement of ways in which you've learned to win with your family and marriage with the same kind of intentionality.
Sure, absolutely. And as far as intentionality goes, I really just encourage people to think about everything. Think about everything. Be that, you know, annoying question asker all the time of why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? And people will hate it in the moment, but long term they will appreciate it. And so you always have to be asking the why question and really thinking about everything you're doing. And as far as family life, I set the expectation from the very beginning that my family comes first, my marriage comes first, and then my relationships with my children, you know, follow that. And then, you know, I'm a pastor somewhere further along down that line. You know, so family, you know, my marriage comes first, then my children. And then as far as my expectations as a pastor come below that. So I set the expectations from the very beginning. And then I have some boundaries around that also. I try not to devote more than one night, full night a week away from the family. And I try to stick to that as best as I can. And that means a lot of early morning. So I'm an early riser anyway, so I'm up pretty early most mornings, and I'm up doing my prayer and my Bible study, but then also just working, just trying to get done what needs to get done early in the morning before the family gets up, and hustling during that time so that I can spend that time in the evenings and other time with them. But I learned a concept early on, and Andy Stanley talks a lot about this, but he says that everybody cheats. He says you're just going to have to decide who gets cheated. You know, you're either going to cheat at work or you're going to cheat at home. And more times than not, I just choose to cheat the church as opposed to my family.
That great word, man. Great way for us to close here. Hey, Steve, just if someone wanted to get up with you listening to the podcast or check out 801 South, could you just give us like the web address that they could go to? And that way they could, you know, take a look at what you guys are doing and if need be able to contact you guys. I know you always want to pay it forward. But if you could just list that website, that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. One of our long-term visions is to be a resource center for other churches, especially those who are interested in doing ministry the way that, that we have started doing it now through 801 South. And so if you want to learn more and see more of what we're about, you can go to 801south.org, and that's 801south.org, and check it out there, the website. We have lots of things up there and connections and links to blogs and lots of other media as well where you can get a feel for what we're doing, and you can see what our five key values are. And if anybody wants to contact me, please, my email is Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, at 801south.org. Feel free to shoot me an email if you have questions or want to talk further. That'd be great.
Great, Steve. I know you're a busy man. Thanks so much for your time today. Well, this concludes our Church Planting Live podcast with Stephen Knopp, a planter and lead pastor of 801 South. If you'd like to get up with Steve or just explore more about what they're doing there in Southeast Charlotte, the website is 801south.org. Until next time, this is Chad Pullins. We'll see you later.